Sometimes, I think it was Drona and Dara, took birth, considered to be the ones that performed austerities. Joan and Darby, they perform penances to have Krishna as their son. So, you know, Nitya Siddhas, of course, don't have to perform austerities and penances. So sometimes what happens is that in order to cover over their real spiritual position, demigods also appear along with that Nitya Siddha. But for the ordinary persons who don't acknowledge that there is a spiritual world, they just understand that part, that, you know, that this person is a demigod or empowered by the demigod, like that. But, you know, for those who are fully aware of the very deeper mysteries of the scriptures, we understand that Arjuna is a Nitya Siddha, and that, of course, when the Nitya Siddhas appear, sometimes it's said that they go back to Godhead, or sometimes it says that they return to the heavenly planet. Sometimes we get both. And what happens is that the demigod living entity who is there with the Nitya Siddha, that demigod goes back to the heavenly planets, and the Nitya Siddha, of course, goes to be with Krishna. So he was born in February, March. What does that make him? February, March. So that would be Sun in Aquarius. I think about the Vedic system. By the Vedic system, it would be mid-January to mid-February is Capricorn. So mid-February to mid-March, it would be Aquarius. Mid-March to mid-April, it is Pisces as well. So yeah, it would be an Aquarian sun sign by the Vedic system. When he appeared as the son of Kunti, his future greatness was proclaimed by air messengers, and all the important personalities from different parts of the universe. So that's Brigid was the son of Aquarius. So when he appeared as the son of Kunti, we're talking about Arjuna.
Arjuna,
I think I needed an extra hour of sleep last night. When he appeared as the son of Kunti, his future greatness was proclaimed by air messengers and all the important personalities from different parts of the universe, such as the demigods, the Gandharvas, the Adityas from the sun globe, the Rudras, the Basus, the Nagas, the different rishis, sages of importance, and the Apsaras, the society girls of heaven, all attended the ceremony. The Apsaras pleased everyone by their heavenly dances and songs. Vasudeva, the father of Lord Krishna and the maternal uncle of Arjuna, sent his priest representative Kashyapa to purify Arjuna by all the prescribed samskaras or reformatory processes. His samskara of being given a name was performed in the presence of the rishis, residents of Satsushunga. He married four wives, Draupadi, Subhadra, Chitrangada, and Ulupi, from whom he got four sons of the names Shrutikirti, Abhimanyu, Babrubaham, and Iravan, respectively. During his student life, he was entrusted to study under the great Professor Dronacharya, along with other pandits and the Kurus. So, you know, it's interesting here that all these great personalities and demigods from all parts of the universe, they all attended the ceremony. when his future greatness was proclaimed. So generally that's what you do, is, you know, when someone is born, you perform the Jatakam Samskara, and an astrologer reads the birth chart, pretty much as soon as they're born. A lot of people ask me to do that, but I don't like to do it. Because, you know, mostly these days you can only give them bad news. That's a fact, you know. It's like, and it's really hard when you're actually speaking about someone's baby. You know, like here, you know, you imagine doing it, someone's proclaiming the glories of Brihad Maharaj or, you know, Arjuna. Oh, he will be this, he will be that. But, you know, I'm very, very reluctant to do the astrology part. I do the ceremony and they ask me to do the astrology part and I usually forget, you know, just conveniently. Unless they really push me over a few months, because, you know, in Kali Yuga, people have a lot of difficulty. A lot of shortcomings. I remember one time I went and saw the congregation of members, and I was reading the chart again. They pushed me. So I went out to their home. I did the ceremony and took a big breath. Anyway, I was reading the chart and I could see the parents just becoming more and more stressed. But you know, it's just a normal life. But you know, a normal life in Kali Yuga is, you know, pretty harsh. But when you talk about, you know, this little baby and all the things they've got to go through, and then I could see them and I'm thinking, oh, you know. And at one stage, the mother just said, you can stop there. It was just too much. And, it, you know, it wasn't particularly harsh, but it wasn't particularly good either. But anyway. So, and all these great personalities actually came. Now, it describes here these Rudras, Vasus, Nagas, Apsaras, they're all the personalities that actually rule the nakshatras. You know, there are 27 stars in the zodiac, and well, 27 each sun sign, or each not sun sign but sign, zodiac sign. There are 2.5 stars, nakshatras. So each one takes up 13 degrees in 20 minutes. So if, you know, if you get two of them, that's 26 degrees, 40 minutes. And the 6 degrees 40 left over, which is so half the star in that sign, and the other half the star takes up half the next sign, like that, so 2.5. There's 28, there's 27, but there's an invisible one called Abhijit, which is 28, which is sometimes used in calculations just to, you know, make things difficult. But all of those, they're each ruled by particular demigods, and here all of those demigods who rule those nakshatras came to, you know, his birth ceremony. Generally, people, you know, that certain stars, the rulers of those stars, are assigned to give trouble. You know, so whenever that star comes up, you know, especially if Saturn or Mars or, you know, the malefic moon, you know, goes into that star, then it gives trouble. If the moon passes through that star, it'll take about one day, and you'll get trouble for a day. If Saturn passes through that star, it'll take about a year of trouble. But here, all of the personalities who rule those stars actually came to his ceremony. Therefore, you know, he was obviously destined, you know, it's described here, he was irresistible as fire. You know, Maharaja, he was like his father Arjuna, that, you know, in order to surpass Prithvi Maharaj, you would actually have to surpass all those demigods who were supporting him from his very birth. You know, great. Yeah, both of them. Because you're comparing one to the other. So,
okay.
Yeah. And two things equal to the same thing, we equal to each other. So, you know, both of them, in order to, you know, overcome them, surpass them, although it may be just a small child, and you think, oh, a little baby, you know, we can destroy that little baby, you know, it's a threat to the throne. But that child is backed up by all the demigods of the universe, so it's insurpassable, as insurpassable as the universe or the ocean. So, back to Arjuna. During his student life, he was entrusted to study under the great professor Dronacharya, along with other Pandavas and the Kurus. But he excelled everyone by his studious intensity, and Dronacharya was especially attracted by his disciplinary affection. Dronacharya accepted him as a first-grade scholar and loved heartily to bestow upon him all the blessings of military science. He was so ardent a student that he used to practice bowmanship even at night. And for all these reasons, Professor Dronacharya was determined to make him the topmost bowman of the world. He passed very brilliantly the examination in piercing the target, and Dronacharya was very pleased. Royal families at Manipur and Tripura are descendants of Arjuna's son, Babrubhan. So, Arjuna saved Dronacharya from the attack of a crocodile, and the Acharya, being pleased with him, rewarded him with a weapon of the name Brahmacharis. Maharaj Drupada was inimical toward Dronacharya, and thus when he attacked the Acharya, Arjuna got him arrested and brought him before Dronacharya. He besieged the city of the name Ahichatra, belonging to Maharaj Drupada, and after taking it over, he gave it to Dronacharya. The confidential treatment of the weapon Brahmacharis was explained to Arjuna, and Dronacharya was promised by Arjuna that he would use the weapon if necessary when he, Dronacharya, personally became an enemy of Arjuna. By this, the Acharya forecast the future battle of Kurukshetra, in which Dronacharya was on the opposite side. Maharaj Drupada, although defeated by Arjuna on behalf of his professor Dronacharya, decided to hand over his daughter Draupadi to his young combatant, but he was disappointed when he heard the false news of Arjuna's death in a fire of a shellac house intrigued by Duryodhana. He therefore arranged for Draupadi's personal selection of a groom who could pierce the eye of a fish hanging on the ceiling. So he wanted his daughter to marry Draupadi, Arjuna, but then thought Arjuna had died, so he, Draupadi was able to perform this selection of a groom. The groom had to pierce the eye of a fish hanging from the ceiling. The trick was especially made because only Arjuna could do it, and he was successful in his desire to hand over his equally worthy daughter to Arjuna. Arjuna's brothers were at that time living incognito under agreement with Duryodhana. And Arjuna and his brothers attended the meeting of Draupadi's selection in the dress of Brahmanas. When all the Kshatriya kings assembled saw that a poor Brahmana had been garlanded by Draupadi for her lord, Sri Krishna disclosed his identity to Balaram. I think Krishna also performed a similar ceremony. But there was a little extra, I think in that one the fish was swinging on a wheel. There was some extra difficulty that even Arjuna just missed. Only Krishna could get that one. That was with one of his wives. I forget which one. So, here you see, you know, we can learn from Arjuna. Arjuna was very devoted to his guru. Dronacharya was a Brahmin, but you know, he taught the military art to the Pandavas, and you know, the one of the things that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do was to establish Vanashram College. Vanashram College starts from about the year of, you know, just after primary school, and you know, people from all over can attend. So it's not just for devotees. It's something to train people in society in general. Of course, devotees will go there. But Vanashram College means it's you know, just an educational institution for everyone. But you know, when they go there, they would learn how to, you know, the Kshatriyas would learn how to fight according to the principles of the Bhagavad Gita. They would learn how to be courageous and you know, heroic and you know, the, resourceful. So there are many different qualities there that the Kshatriyas have to have. And, you know, there would be training of Vaishyas and training of Brahmins. But actually the devotees would be the teachers. And the Brahmanas particularly would be the teachers. The Brahmanas are supposed to teach. They teach everything. All the teaching is done, you know, under the Brahmanas. Otherwise, you know, people cannot properly understand, you know, things as they should be. So that's, you know, that's one thing that Srila Prabhupada wanted at the Vanashram College. And Arjuna, you see here, described that, you know, even at night he used to practice his bowmanship. In this way, his guru, or his teacher, become very, very pleased. And we know that in spiritual life it's the same principle. Yasya prasada, bhagavat prasada, yasya prasada, nagati katobi, dayamstu vamstu shayi sastri samjayam, vande virvashi chalanagavinda. So that's one of the prayers we sing every morning at 4:30. That by the mercy of the spiritual master, one can make, you know, all advancement in spiritual life, Krishna consciousness. And if one doesn't receive the mercy of the spiritual master, one cannot make any, you know, tangible advancement. So that's actually the secret of success in spiritual life. That you know, we just, whatever the spiritual master has given, and of course those instructions have come down from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Those instructions originally come from Krishna, and then in the chain of gurus, the gurus such as Srila Prabhupada, he will modify those instructions according to time, place and circumstance. And of course we should understand that only the great acharyas can modify the principles of Krishna consciousness. So therefore, when Srila Prabhupada first asked his disciples to chant Hare Krishna, he asked them to chant 64 rounds a day, because that's, you know, what they did in his guru's mat, you know, ashram. 64 hours, that's about 8 hours of chanting. 8 hours of chanting. And, you know, his disciples just, you know, no, we can't do that, Prabhupada. They said, all right, 32. And that was impossible. So he said 16 minimum. And then
minimum.
But no less. That, you know, chanting 16 rounds of the holy name of the Lord is what brings us above the animal platform of life, where we're just thinking of this body and absorbed in the body. If we chant the holy names of the Supreme Lord, we become placed under the spiritual energy, and by the mercy of the Lord, our spiritual life unfolds very nicely. And, so Srila Prabhupada, 16 rounds. And, you know, he made so many other principles. Sometimes devotees say that, you know, Srila Prabhupada was very innovative and, you know, very flexible, and he modified things, you know, therefore we should do that as well. But that's actually incorrect. Only the Acharya can modify, make those modifications. One time, Srila Prabhupada was discussing, you know, with one of his disciples, and the disciple was, you know, saying that, you know, you modified this and you modified that, you know, the principles to make it possible for us to become devotees. But although Prabhupada simplified it, if we follow it, we get the full blessing of Krishna. Krishna says, okay, they're following the guru's instruction, they're following my representative, I'll give them the full mercy. Even though it's not 64 rounds, Krishna gives you the full 64 rounds mercy. Anyway, someone was talking about a codicy, you know, like adjusting for a codicy. You know, because those who preach Krishna consciousness, you know, generally on a codicy they'll fast from grains, but they may otherwise have a, you know, a big meal and go out and preach. Whereas those around the temple should fast from all foods and water. No, but you know, if you have a busy service in the temple, you know, people will also, you know, but they may reduce it. But according to the work we're doing, especially preaching, actually, Prabhupada did put that emphasis, especially if you're preaching, otherwise, you know, on the codices we're supposed to, you know, fast. He said, you know, this is not my invention, this is my guru's instruction, because he personally gave that instruction, that some of his disciples said, oh, I cannot go out, it's a codicy, you know, because I'm fasting, I'm too weak. He said, feed them and send them out. So, you know, those modifications come from Bhaktisiddhanta Srila Prabhupada, and his disciple mentioned something, and, you know, that so we should adjust, you know, according to... And Prabhupada said, yes, if you have the authorization from the guru. You know, the principle of yeah, I'll make an adjustment. But the guru, or the GBC, you know, or you know, the local authorities, haven't authorized it. That sort of innovation is actually just speculation. It actually has to be authorized, you know, by the Parampara. Then it is acceptable. So, you know, anyway, if we follow those, just like Srila Prabhupada has made Krishna consciousness so simple for us, that if we chant Hare Krishna, which takes about, you know, for a lot of people 2 hours, for some an hour and 20, I think an hour and 20 is probably at the minimum. Anything after 2 hours, you might have slept through a couple of rounds. But yeah, it's about an hour and a half, 2 hours like that. Eat Krishna prasadam, you know, associate with the devotees, you know, do some service for the temple, try and just, you know, help other people become Krishna conscious, follow the four regulatory principles. You know, that's the whole program for the devotees. If they follow those simple things, they get the full mercy of Krishna. Krishna's full mercy, because they're following what, you know, Krishna's representative has given. But if someone does something more than that, it appears to be more than that, but it's not authorized, then they actually can be in difficulty. Actually, one of the hardest things I've seen for devotees to do is just to be a simple devotee and just do the simple routine thing. That's one of the hardest things to do, because everyone wants to do something bigger that where they stand out. But actually, the real austerity is just to be a simple devotee and follow the simple instructions. That's hard. That's really difficult. Everyone wants to do the big thing. So, but if we do the simple thing, then the big things come by Krishna's grace. So, anyway, we'll continue here. He met the Gopi at Haridwar, and he was attracted by a girl belonging to Nagaloka. And thus, Iruvan was born. You imagine, you know, his wife, that would have been... is that Subhadra? What was her name? There's four here. It's not Draupadi. It's not Alupi, because she's in the heavenly planets, I think. And I don't think it's Chitrangada. You're going to mention her next. It must be Subhadra, not Subhadra, here from Dwarka. But, oh no, actually, maybe it is Chitrangada. But you know, imagine, you know, his wife from Nagaloka, such a character. So similarly, he met Chitrangada, a daughter of the king of Manipur, and thus Babrubahan was born. Lord Sri Krishna made a plan to help Arjuna to kidnap Subhadra, that is the sister of Sri Krishna, because Baladev was inclined to hand her over to Duryodhana. Yudhisthira also agreed with Sri Krishna, and thus Subhadra was taken by force by Arjuna and married to him. Subhadra's son is Abhimanyu, the father of Parikshit Maharaj, the posthumous child. Arjuna satisfied the fire god by setting fire to the Kandava forest, and thus the fire god gave him one weapon. Indra was angry when the fire was set in the Kandava forest. And thus Indra, assisted by all the other demigods, began fighting with Arjuna for his great challenge. They were defeated by Arjuna, and Indradev returned to his heavenly kingdom. Arjuna also promised all protection to one Mayasura, and the latter presented him one valuable conch shell celebrated as Devadatta. Similarly, he received many other valuable weapons from Indradev when he was satisfied to see his chivalry. When Maharaj Yudhisthira was disappointed in defeating the king of Magadha, Jarasandha, it was Arjuna only who gave King Yudhisthira all kinds of assurances, and thus Arjuna, Bhima and Lord Krishna started for Magadha to kill Jarasandha. When he went out to bring all other kings of the world under the subjugation of the Pandavas, as was usual after the coronation of every emperor, he conquered the country named Kalinda and brought in subjugation King Bhagadatta. Then he travelled through countries like Antagiri, Ulukapura and Modapura and brought under subjugation all the rulers. Sometimes he underwent severe types of penances, and later on he was rewarded by Indradev. Lord Shiva also wanted to try the strength of Arjuna, and in the form of an aborigine, Lord Shiva met him. There was a great fight between the two, and at last Lord Shiva was satisfied with him and disclosed his identity. Arjuna prayed to the Lord in all humbleness, and the Lord, being pleased with him, presented him the Pasupata weapon. He acquired many other important weapons from different demigods. He received Dandastra from Yamaraj, Pasastra from Varuna, and Antadhanastra from Kuvera, the treasurer of the heavenly kingdom. Indra wanted him to come to the heavenly kingdom, the Indraloka planet beyond the moon planet. In that planet he was cordially received by the local residents and he was awarded reception in the heavenly parliament of Indradev. There he met Indradev, who not only presented him with the Vajra weapon, but also taught him, that's what the thunderbolt, I mean, but also taught him the military musical science as used in the heavenly planet. In one sense, Indra is the real father of Arjuna, and therefore, indirectly, he wanted to entertain Arjuna with the famous society girl of heaven, Urvasi, the celebrated beauty. The society girls of heaven are lusty, and Urvasi was very eager to contact Arjuna, the strongest human being. She met him in his room and expressed her desires, but Arjuna sustained his unimpeachable character by closing his eyes before Urvasi, addressing her as mother of the Kuru dynasty and placing her in the category of his mothers Kunti, Madri and Sachidevi, wife of Indradev. Disappointed, Urvasi cursed Arjuna and left. In the heavenly planet, he also met the great celebrated ascetic Lomasa and prayed to him for the protection of Maharaj Yudhisthira. So what was that curse by Urvasi? He became a eunuch. Yeah, so it ended up being a benediction because, you know, the dancing and the music that he learned in the heavenly planets, plus being cursed to become a eunuch, then he disguised himself later on as a eunuch when he was in exile and couldn't be detected. When his inimical cousin Duryodhana was under the clutches of the Gandharvas, he wanted to save him and requested the Gandharvas to release Duryodhana. But the Gandharvas refused and thus he fought with them and got Duryodhana released. It was very humiliating, of course, for Duryodhana. When all the Pandavas lived incognito, he presented himself in the court of King Virat as a eunuch and was employed as a musical teacher of Uttara, his future daughter-in-law, and was known in the Virat court as Brihannala. Okay, let's try and imagine Arjuna as a eunuch. As just say the what is it? It says here, unsurpassable as the ocean, is I guess mysterious as the ocean. As Brihannala, he fought on behalf of Uttara, the son of King Virat, and thus defeated the Kurus in the fight incognito. His secret weapons were safely kept in the custody of a Somi tree, and he ordered Uttara to get them back. His identity and his brother's identity were later on disclosed to Uttara. Dronacharya was informed of Arjuna's presence in the fight of the Kurus and the Virats. Later, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna killed many great generals like Karna and others. After the Battle of Kurukshetra, he punished Ashwatthama, who had killed all the five sons of Draupadi. Then all the brothers went to Bhishma Dev. It is due to Arjuna only that the great philosophical discourses of the Bhagavad Gita were again spoken by the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. His wonderful acts on the battlefield of Kurukshetra are vividly described in the Mahabharata. So this is very important, that the reason that Arjuna literally instigated the reading of the Bhagavad Gita, the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita, and he fought the battle of Kurukshetra to preserve those teachings. And Srila Prabhupada also fought all over the world for Krishna's instructions to be preserved, maintained and expanded all over the world. Same service as Arjuna. Only difference is that whereas Arjuna was fighting with bow and arrow, Srila Prabhupada was able to do the same with a pen and his words and some prasada. Arjuna was defeated, however, by his son Babu Bahan at Manipur and fell unconscious when Alupi saved him. After the disappearance of Lord Krishna, the message was brought by Arjuna to Maharaj Yudhisthira. Arjuna again visited Dwarka, and all the widow wives of Lord Krishna lamented before him. He took them all in the presence of Vasudeva and pacified all of them. Later on, when Vasudeva passed away, he performed his funeral ceremony in the absence of Krishna. While Arjuna was taking all the wives of Krishna to Indraprastha, he was attacked on the way and he could not protect the ladies in his custody. At last, advised by Vyasadeva, all the brothers headed for Mahaprasthan. On the way, at the request of his brother, he gave up all important weapons as useless and he dropped them in the water. So ultimately, we also follow in Arjuna's footsteps that whatever we gain in the course of our lifetime, in the end, we just discard them all as useless, and having worked tirelessly and following the simple instructions given by the Guru, just as Arjuna, at the end of his life, he went to be with Krishna eternally, then if we also follow the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, we can also be with Krishna eternally. Everything in this world that we have, no matter how valuable, ultimately will be discarded as insignificant. So if there's any questions or comments?
You said a rupee in the purport of Hardwar. Arjun met a rupee at Hardwar. He is attracted by short knowledge and not a worker. He must be wrong as then. We were thinking through it. He said that Rupi had gone somewhere else by now.
Yeah.
That's what I heard about.
Yeah. No, it's that. Keep going. What is. So.
Well, I just wanted you to clarify.
Clarify that. So, I'm trying to remember what I said as well. What did I say?
Yes.
I was just trying to work out which of the wives was the
I thought that's Prabhupada's expression is said that actually it was a Lupi who was
the Naga. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, because Subhadra, of course, is not, nor is Drupadi. Chitrangada is got to be either Alupi or Chitrangada. But he said, first he describes Alupi, then he says similarly he met Chitrangada, as if to say, it appears that Alupi may be the Naga from the Naga Loka, and Chitrangada is not. That's what it appears. I'm not exactly sure. It was one of those two. I was just wondering which one. Yes, there's a beautiful summary there.
Shame. So why he was referring to him as a kshatriya
is with yes, that's because Arjuna was thinking on the bodily platform, therefore he preached to him from that bodily platform. So Arjuna, therefore Krishna said, Asocham Vasa Chastam Vigya Vidam Chavasa Seya Gadal Sumu Gadal Sumu Charam Asocham Dipandidaha. While speaking those words, you are lamenting for the body or that which is not worthy of lamentation. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. So Arjuna was thinking in terms of the body, his body, and the bodies of others. And therefore, first of all, Krishna gave him instruction while he's thinking in that bodily conception that even if he thought in those terms, still it was foolish. Because as a Kshatriya, so if he remained on the bodily platform, as a Kshatriya, he could never be happy, acting like that. And then gradually Krishna brought him back, most of these arguments, while you're thinking on the body, you should actually rise above them. You know, if you're on that platform, what you're doing is wrong. You're still better to fight. But actually, if you come to the spiritual platform, you'll see that there is even greater reason to fight. The instruction to Arjuna when he's thinking on the bodily platform is very important because most of the people in this world are on the bodily platform. Therefore, there are many stories about Krishna and the Pandavas in other Puranas which are meant for those in the lower modes of material nature. And they do refer to different pastimes which are not so much taken up in the Srimad Bhagavatam or Mahabharata, which give a lot of good instruction for those on the bodily platform through Arjuna. But particularly, when it comes to then, so even on the bodily platform, one should perform one's duties. It's described that transcendence, or the way of freedom from sin, is situated in the Vedic instructions. That's there in the fourth chapter. Any person who follows the Vedic instructions, even if they're on the bodily platform, gradually moves towards sinlessness. They become purified. It's actually, if they perform their duty, if they don't perform their duty even on the bodily platform, it means that they will actually become more sinful. And of course we know them as Vanasampra. So whether they see Arjuna as someone from the heavenly planets and they just see him purely in terms of bodily platform, they're receiving good instruction that you should still perform your duty. And if they come even above that, they get instruction on the spiritual platform, which you find in the Bhagavad Gita, especially, Vyasadeva decided, being instructed by Narada Muni, that there's too much instruction on the bodily platform in the Mahabharata. You need to just isolate the spiritual instruction, so that people can see it more clearly as the most essential instruction. And we want people to rise above the bodily platform and just, if they follow the spiritual instruction of Krishna, automatically on the spiritual and material platform, everything is properly adjusted. But if they just follow the bodily platform instructions, they may, they'll become free from sin and pious, but they may not necessarily come to the spiritual platform. If they follow the spiritual instruction, they automatically become pious, or automatically become sinless, and they go back to the spiritual world.
Overcome it and for those who are on spiritual paths, because those who are, if you want to become free from bodily passion, just surrender all, sarva dharma pranapeksha, just surrender all the dharmas, leave it and just listen to me. So he has instructions for those who are on bodily passion and instructions for those you still don't lose, you're still every time winner.
Yes. The difference is that in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna gives instructions for the karmis on the bodily platform or the jnanis on the mental platform, he's directly telling them, he's giving them instructions in such a way as, this is inferior to bhakti, come to bhakti which is transcendental. In other instructions to the jnanis and the karmis, he's almost, you know, the instructions are allowing them to continue to be a karmi, to continue to be a jnani and do it properly. But in Bhagavad Gita, the reason he gives instructions to them is he's saying, this is what you're supposed to do, but if you compare this to bhakti, you'll see that you should really be rising above this karma and jnana and yoga and coming to bhakti. So Bhagavad Gita is in fact just instructions on bhakti alone. Give them all up.
Yes.
That's right. And from the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, we accept Krishna as Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of God, which is another very important spiritual instruction. So, you know, Bhagavad Gita is giving this instruction about spiritual life in the very beginning. Okay, there's one quick question.
Current education doesn't accept astrology as astrology is the university branch of study. So, how we can, what kind of reason and logic we can give to explain someone that this stars influence your life?
Well, first of all, they would have to come to the people have to come to the understanding that there is intelligent beings within the universe who have control over the universal management. Ultimately, that's the understanding they have to come to, and therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, you know, these things are from, you know, from the fourth chapter, Krishna is saying, I spoke this Bhagavad Gita to the Sun God. So, and from the very beginning, you know, these instructions are there that we have to understand that there are higher authorities, personalities who are, you know, more intelligent, more powerful than us, and they are controlling and managing the universe on behalf of God. If they understand that principle, then they can easily accept astrology.